This is the Rise Up Sea Red podcast, all about the Arizona Cardinals and the NFL, featuring insider and outsider perspectives. Enjoy the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web. Now here are your hosts, Jess Root and Seth Cox.
Hello, Arizona Cardinals fans, and welcome to the latest edition of the Rise Up Sea Red podcast. I'm your host, Jess Root from CardsWire.com, the NFL Wire site from the USA Today family of sites. Seth Cox, my co-host, is on the line with me, as is typically the case. The site editor for RevengeOfTheBirds.com, SB Nation's Arizona Cardinals site, and also one of the hosts of the original Draft Breakdown podcast, as they are working on off-season draft content. Seth, what's new in your draft podcast these days?
Not much. We took a look at the Julio Jones trade and the Aaron Rodgers non-trade, and discussed that and how it didn't make sense for the Falcons to trade Julio Jones after the draft. Why not go in playing with your full deck of whatever you're going to have before you make that decision? And then, you know, the Aaron Rodgers thing, people are saying, oh, that's an indictment of Jordan Love and that he stinks and that they're regretting the pick. And I'm like, well, maybe it's an indictment of the fact that Aaron Rodgers literally just won the MVP of the league and they don't want to trade the MVP of the league right now, even if there were, you know, issues within the organization. So that's what we talked about on the free show. And then on the Patreon, we had a great episode to discuss the top college programs and coming into this year and players to know, Heisman hopefuls, and then some freshmen, incoming freshmen to know. Went way deep in the in terms of trying to figure out who could be the next, you know, Kyler Murray, who could be the next Zaven Collins or Isaiah Simmons. So looking down the road at 18-year-olds and how they're going to play out. So it was a lot of fun. And we'll, you know, be doing that every week. Maybe not a free show every week, but if you're a patron for $2 a month, you can get the extra show. That's, like I said, a lot of fun. So,
and we are on episode 308 of the Rise Up Sea Red podcast, best hour of Cardinals talk on the web. And we took a little time off, but we're back because OTAs have wrapped up and mandatory minicamp kicked off on Tuesday. And a couple of topics that we need to get into, and that's first and foremost, Chandler Jones is kind of holding out. So we're going to talk about Chandler Jones, Jordan Hicks, their absence from minicamp. We will delve into the Julio Jones trade and how it affects the Cardinals, since the Cardinals will face Jones and the Tennessee Titans in their season opener on the road. We'll talk about as well whether the Cardinals will regret not going after him, and then talk a little bit more about the players on the Cardinals roster we want to see make a big jump this offseason, as we have mini camp wrapping up by the end of the week and then training camp a few weeks away. So let's go ahead and get started. Seth, this is, you know, quietly, it has not quite made national noise, but the Cardinals did not have on the practice field either Jordan Hicks or Chandler Jones. And Jordan Hicks is a mile. Now, last week, neither of them were in voluntary OTAs, and reasonably understandable. They were voluntary for one. Jordan Hicks has been given permission to seek a trade for another team, onto another team, since Zaven Collins, the Cardinals' first-round pick, has all been anointed as their starter, basically. And so it would make sense why he wouldn't be at the voluntary part. He still is not in camp. Chandler Jones is in the final year of his deal. There haven't been any real reports of any contract negotiations. And he was at the facility, so he reported for Media Day on Monday. Pictures were taken, so you can clearly see he intends on being the team. But he was not on the practice field. I can only assume he was in the facility. for the other parts and things that they had during minicamp. But we officially have a sort of holdout, the first holdout that the Cardinals have had since David Johnson in 2018, which led to his eventual contract extension. Let's talk about Jones first. How concerned are you about this situation?
Not really. The reality is, for those that don't understand the way contracts work, is that the Jones has basically made all of his guaranteed money already, which means that, God forbid, Chandler Jones pops the bicep again and is going to need surgery and miss another season. The Cardinals don't have to keep him because there's no, they can basically have an injury settlement, like, you know, a rookie undrafted free agent type of guy. They don't have to pay him his salary this season, which is pretty high. You know, let's be honest. And so now, that's not to say that the Cardinals would do that. However, from a business perspective on both sides, this holdout makes sense, or whatever you want to call it. Because Jones has no guaranteed money if he's coming off of serious injury and surgery. And if he does get hurt, the Cardinals, let's be honest, can't afford the ill will of not paying him or moving on from him after he gets injured. So it's best in terms of everybody if they figure out a way to get this done, and whether it's a full extension or just rolling some of the salary into guarantees and taking cap hit away from this season, you know, and doing what they normally do, which is kicking the can down the road a little bit. You know, there's different options. I would think, based on the way that they've structured everybody outside of AJ Green, it would make sense to extend Chandler for an additional year and have his salary and contract end in a similar fashion around the time JJ Watts does. And then that way you're all of that's kind of coming off the books at once. But the Jordan Hicks thing is completely different. And that's, I think, going to be the more intriguing and interesting one to watch, because I don't think anybody's really concerned that Chandler Jones won't be on the roster next year.
That's true. The one thing that I worry about with the Jones thing is that it's really kind of odd. He is at that age where the Cardinals have let a couple of notable Cardinals players go. Calais Campbell and Patrick Peterson, they allowed to walk at this kind of age. And Steve Keim is on the record as saying he would rather let a player go in free agency a year too early than a year too late. Now, Jones had 19 sacks in 2019. He didn't look particularly great the first five games of last season before he got hurt. I don't think we were necessarily seeing a decline, but he didn't have the production early on. And so I'm sure that they're trying to find the right, whether now that what would be more telling than anything is if the Cardinals are doing what they did with Patrick Peterson, a year ago, which should be very interesting considering they don't have a young pass rusher they're grooming behind Jones, which would be the, it would make more sense to play this game had they drafted, say, like a Kwity Paye or Jalen Phillips or one of those top pass rushers in the draft this
year. If they had basically prepared for this scenario, or if they had re-signed Hassan Reddick.
Right. And that would have made sense. Now, he has not come out and said, but we know it's contract related because Buda Baker and DJ Humphrey said as much on Tuesday after practice. Business is business. The NFL is a league of business. So this is a business decision Jones is doing. But the fact that he was there for media day and took all those, he was at the photo ops and the videos and the video promos and all of that means he intends on being a Cardinal this year and will be happy to do it. How it plays out, though, there's one way that I think that this is, if this is not just leverage creating, which this is what players do. So a player going into the last year of his deal, a high profile player going into the last year of his deal, who has outplayed his contract, which Chandler Jozumar certainly did. When he signed the contract extension 4 years ago, there was no doubt it was a bargain then because it was top pass rusher, $17.5 million average, when there were other guys, other pass rushers who hadn't been as productive who were getting more money. He just got it for longer. And so he outplayed his contract. He's getting up there in age. This is common practice. Do a holdout to get that, to withhold your services to get that money. That's the only thing you can do for leverage. I whether it's a leverage move, it could also simply be playing it safe with his body before he gets that contract, so he doesn't have any sort of nicks or dings or whatever, or even major injury before a new deal is set. The last time the Cardinals did this, had this happen, was with David Johnson in 2018. He kind of held out of minicamp, showed up for training camp still, and then the contract extension didn't happen until right before the season. In fact, I recall it was like the day before the season opener, I believe, because it happened on a Saturday afternoon when I was out eating lunch before an ASU game. And so it was right before the season. It wasn't as quickly as we all thought it would happen. So I think eventually this just will play out that Jones will get an extension, whether it's another year or maybe 2 years. Ideally, it'll be in a scenario where he perhaps can wrap up his career in Arizona, or at least be in a place where he's at the age where then he can start taking less money, whatever. I want players to get paid. They risk their bodies. They're NFL executives, NFL teams make money. I want the players to get paid. But that said, I hope this gets done. I'm positive it gets done. The comment that I heard from somewhere, from around the bend, it was a comment that Chandler is not playing this year on that deal, on his current contract. That means one of two things. He's going to sit out or until he gets a new one, or he believes that a contract extension is coming, and I'm hoping it's the latter. Now, Jordan Hicks, completely different scenario, and I think the Cardinals, this is not it. I don't know how bad this is going to get. Jordan Hicks, I don't think, is going to find a team that is willing to trade for him his current salary. His tape last year showed that he wasn't the player he was. Teams aren't really looking for linebackers at his age who have a history of... Now, granted, let's say last year, the last two seasons, he's played almost every single... I think he's missed a handful of snaps out of the entire last 2 years after missing lots of time with nicks and dings and minor leg injuries in Philadelphia. I just don't think that there's a market for him. And the way it feels right now is he's unhappy. He's unhappy that he was unseated there. This is a pride thing. He is hurt that he was replaced so easily by a guy, by a rookie player like that. Boom. And they anointed him a day one starter without saying, hey, we think he can compete with Jordan for the starting job. I'm hoping ultimately that he has a reality check and he comes to grips with what the reality is of who he is in the NFL now, and that he will then happily and willingly take his role on the bench as a substitute and still a leader in the locker room, because if they have to trade or release him, based on the depth that they have, it is super risky because, and I wrote an article about this a while back, the total number of defensive snaps played by the entire linebacker room outside of Jordan Hicks equals 1 year of Jordan Hicks of experience, which worries me because, great, I hope Isaiah Simmons and Zaven Collins becomes the Bobby Wagner and KJ Wright for the NFC West for the next decade. The problem is, if one of them gets hurt, then you're relying on a Ezekiel Turner, a Tanner Vallejo, an Evan Weaver, or Terrence Smith, who you probably don't even know who that is, guys.
Yeah, and the reality is that there's no value for Hicks on the market right now. Nobody wants a older linebacker that is making plays 7-8 yards down the field, even at the cost that he would be, which is at a reduced cost after he took a pay cut. The reason I say it in that manner is because injuries in training camp in the preseason will make a veteran Jordan Hicks more valuable to a number of teams, including the Arizona Cardinals. So, I mean, I think that's just kind of where it's at right now. It's unfortunate that it ended this way, or got to this point, I guess, is the easiest way to put it with Hicks. But it's also the reality of the NFL. Like, you have to be willing to understand that you're going to get replaced eventually, unless you're – wait. No, everybody gets replaced. And, I mean,
like, heck, they're even maybe replacing Aaron Rodgers, last year's MVP, which is crazy.
Right. And so I get the pride thing, but the reality is a team paid you a lot of money. Your performance realistically wasn't worth what you were paid. That's not your fault. That's the team's fault. They're the ones that offered you the contract. They decided to ask you for a pay reduction, and I think honestly, if I'm being realistic, that's where their mistake was. They should have just waited till post draft and cut them if it got to this point. But the reality was that they wanted to make sure that either Zaven Collins or Micah Parsons were on the board, and they could pull the trigger before they just got rid of Jordan Hicks, but they also needed the money.
So, yeah, and that's the thing that's really unfortunate, because I think it was the combination of both things. Like, he did the team a favor. Now, granted, they might have cut him, but he gave up money this year for the good of the team, and then they drafted his replacement and took his starting job away. And right. It was two different things that happened. And so I can totally understand where he's coming from now.
Yeah, I definitely do. But you also have to look at it as the cutthroat business it is. And that's what the Cardinals are looking at right now. And, you know, they believe, right or wrong, they believe going with Zaven Collins and Isaiah Simmons is the way to go. I think you and I were, even when we started discussing Zaven, I think you and I assumed that was going to be...
It'll be a transition.
A transitional player, not a guy that they would expect to play, ideally, over 1,000 snaps in year one. And so that's going to make things... difficult.
Absolutely. Coming up next on Rise Up Sea Red Podcast, the best of our Cardinals talk on the web. We're going to talk it about the Julio Jones trade. Even though the Cardinals didn't get him, it's going to affect the Cardinals because they will face him in week one. What does that mean for the Cardinals defense? What does that mean for the chances of beating the Titans in the season opener? That's coming up next on Rise Up Sea Red. We're back on the Rise Up Sea Red Podcast, the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web. the Julio Jones trade went down. Now, I know the Cardinals were sort of in the mix thanks to DeAndre Hopkins, and we'll get more into that in a few minutes. But he lands with the Tennessee Titans, giving them a really intriguing offensive pairing. So you've got A.J. Brown, you've got Julio Jones, you've got Derrick Henry, and a quarterback in Ryan Tannehill, who, after being disappointing in Miami, has turned into one of the more underratedly effective and productive quarterbacks in the NFL. The Cardinals will face them in week one. And they're going to face them with a cornerback group that we don't know how it's going to play out yet. How they're going to match up, who's going to be the starters. If it's going to be Malcolm Butler, Byron Murphy, plus Robert Alford. If it's going to be Robert Alford, Byron Murphy, and then adding Malcolm Butler. If Darquez Denard, whom they just signed this last week, is going to be in that mix as well. It's going to be interesting to see how differently do you see that week one matchup with Julio Jones as opposed to before?
You know, I thought they could win week one. I still think they can win because it makes the Titans offense better. And I didn't expect the Cardinals defense to be necessarily putting up crazy, crazy stops at this point or at that point in the season yet anyways. But it just means that they're going to need more from their offense. And that's going to be – I think that's going to be the question mark is, can they keep up with a Titans offense that looks like it can be one of the better offenses and more complete offenses in the NFL?
It's interesting for me in terms of actually what I find super intriguing is the betting perspective, the odds perspective, because normally what you see when you add a player of that caliber, you'd see a difference in Super Bowl odds and whatnot. And I will tell you this, that, okay, so there has been a little movement now. When the Julio Jones trade first went down, and I'm going to talk, I'll talk a little gambling terms for those. So the Cardinals and so the Titans opened as 2.5-point favorites, which is at home, a home team, generally speaking, starts out with a 3-point advantage. And so a 2.5 points basically makes it, they're considered even, maybe a little bit to the Cardinals. There's a little bit of uncertainty about the Titans. They were on the money line. So the money line, if you bet the first straight up winner, the money line is differently. So different. And usually there's more money involved with the spread both ways. So the Titans were at -115, meaning to win $100, you'd have to bet 115. That line moved slightly to -120. So essentially, the addition of Julio Jones didn't change the point spread initially, and just made it ever so slightly more likely that the Titans would beat the Cardinals. Now, pulling up the odds right now, the line has now moved to -155. And the Titans are now a 3-point favorite. So the line has moved a little bit. The addition of Jones was worth a 0.5 point on the point spread and was worth another $30 or $35 on the money line, making it just a little, again, so a little more likely that the Titans will beat the Cardinals in week one. I find that kind of intriguing. It doesn't mean they're going to be juggernauts, especially here. Here's the thing we're adding Julio Jones goes. He's going to a new offense. That's a new offense for the Titans because they lost their offensive coordinator. So they lost Corey Davis. They lost Jonnu Smith. they lost their offensive coordinator. They lost their offensive coordinator. So now they have a new receiver. He's fantastic and when he's healthy. And they've got a new system. So not only does Julio need to learn it, Ryan Tannehill has to learn it, and Derrick Henry has to learn it, and so does A.J. Brown. And in terms of what the Cardinals offer, what's it going to do to their secondary, I'm mildly optimistic considering what we saw from them defensively a year ago. The pass defense, especially down the field against receivers, wasn't an issue. Now, part of that was matchup. They missed out on a lot of top receivers. But the Cardinals' defensive scheme, Vance Joseph's scheme, was actually pretty good down the field. And the Titans aren't, other than the running game, they're not a dink-and-dunk offense, unless that changes this year. They do power run, and they push the ball down the field. And so if that still is the case, if they're stout against the run, they don't have to be great. If they're good enough against the run to force passing situations, I think they can be all right. Julio Jones presents a problem, obviously, because you don't have the Cardinals. Malcolm Butler has been good. I don't know the Cardinals have a lockdown guy. Now, technically, if we want to go by last year, Patrick Peterson really wasn't a lockdown guy, but he had moments. He had games where he could be that lockdown guy. And so that's the only problem I see. What do you see, any other possibilities or changes or any other concerns other than that?
I mean, the biggest concern is they just don't have a lot of what you would say usable depth at a lot of key positions. We discussed the linebackers already, and then the corners aren't exactly teeming with depth in case, you know, a Malcolm Butler or Byron Murphy are struggling. I mean, I guess you can say Robert Alford, but I doubt that anybody's really banking on Alford to contribute this year. It's also interesting to me that, and you brought up a couple lines. The one line that I looked at immediately when they added Julio was their win total for the season. And it did go up, but it only went up half a win. So it went from 9 to 9.5 wins on the season. I talked about this with Justin last night. I don't think anybody would say that this was a bad trade for the Titans. Julio Jones is still one of the premier wide receivers in the NFL when he's on the field. He's obviously 32, dealt with injuries throughout his career, he's dealt with injuries. And he's going to want another contract. So those are all things going against him. But the reality is, if you look at the Tennessee Titans, their problem was not their offense. Their problem has been their defense is continuing to, you know, I don't want to say get worse, but their defense has taken steps back since they were kind of dominant in, I think it was 2019 when they were, or maybe it was even 2018 when they were really good. They were third in points in 2018. In 2019, they were 12th in points against. And then last year in 2020, they were 24th. And I don't think you're beating the Kansas City Chiefs in the AFC in a shootout. Tampa Bay showed the way you have to beat the Chiefs. So I just don't know if this does anything other than maybe make them the favorites in the AFC South.
Which they already were, right?
I think Indy was technically the favorite. But, yeah, I mean, this would be akin to, you know, the Cardinals making a move to be the best team in the NFC West, as opposed to being, you know, making a move to be competitive against the Green Bay Packers and Tampa Bay Buccaneers, right? Like, if you're Tennessee, you're already, like you said, you're kind of the top of the AFC South. The moves you make should dictate it and be about competing now to win the AFC Championship. I'm not sure that this move does that. Maybe it helps them beat the Arizona Cardinals in week one, and maybe that down the road gives them home field advantage or something. I just don't know if it does anything for the long-term outlook of the team.
Coming next on the Rise Up Sea Red podcast, the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web. Let's talk more about Julio Jones and the fact that the Cardinals never made any serious move to get him. Will they regret that? Should they have done that? And why didn't they do that? That's coming up next on Rise Up Sea Red. We're back on the Rise Up Sea Red podcast, the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web. And so the report came out. Granted, we knew early on that the Cardinals could be in the mix, thanks to DeAndre Hopkins and a couple of tweets of his, where he made it known he would redo his deal to make room for Julio Jones. He then posted a picture about reminding the world about a conversation we didn't know existed, but there was a conversation between him, AJ Green, and Julio Jones about what if we played together. That fueled a little bit of a fire. However, thanks to SI.com's Albert Breer, we learned that while everyone in the NFC West talked to the Falcons, no one made a serious offer. That includes the Cardinals, of course, which means they inquired. And if they made an offer, it was probably something laughable, like, hey, we'll swap fourths for him next year or whatever, whatnot. We'll trade our projected condition, our compensatory fifth for Jones. Because here's the thing. I don't even think they'd even offered the second round pick, which is eventually what Tennessee had to give up, because that would have been a serious offer. If you were the Cardinals, would you have given it serious thought to acquire Julio Jones, considering what they've done this offseason, considering how they're trying to construct this team? Fit aside, would it have been a smart idea for an all-in type year to go for a guy like Julio Jones to make that offense elite?
I mean, it's always, like I said, about the Titans, it's always smart to get better players, and Julio Jones would be a great player. There's two issues. One, obviously, you already signed AJ Green. I think, again, if this was a move that was made in April before, or in March, you know, before the draft and everything, I think it's a move the Cardinals should have pursued. At this juncture of the offseason, with the moves they've already made, I don't know, again, if it's the move that takes them over the top and makes them the best team in the NFC. Clearly, it makes them better, because DeAndre Hopkins and Julio Jones would be otherworldly in terms of wide receiver play. There still would be question marks about a couple of things. Obviously, the defense. And then I think the other thing we would have question marks about would still be the running game. And so they weren't a Julio Jones away from being a Super Bowl favorite. I would even say they probably weren't a Julio Jones away from being a Super Bowl contender on paper at this point. And it just, I don't know if it would have pushed them over the edge. Now, that being said, you're still getting a great player and a potential all-pro. So it's never a bad thing to acquire those guys. I just don't know if it would have been the topper for them.
It would have been. If there's one thing that I think it would have been fantastic, it would have made this offense If Cliff Kingsbury can do things with offenses, I think it would have made them unstoppable. Imagine a passing attack where you have DeAndre Hopkins, Julio Jones, AJ Green, and then Christian Kirk around him. I don't think there is a team in the league. Now, you have to make it work schematically because, honestly, all three of those receivers are traditionally X on their team. Now, AJ's going to be a Z. He's going to be the opposite. And I wrote an article about this, is that Hopkins, to be honest, DeAndre Hopkins played, when he was in Houston in the last couple of years there, he played one quarter of his routes were run out of the slot. He could obviously do it. So you could still leave Julio outside. And honestly, Julio and AJ Green both have run a good share of their routes out of the slot. Now, that's different than being a slot receiver. But, if you have those three guys on that team, because of the relationship they all have, I think egos aside, I don't think the egos would be a problem because you basically have a Pro Bowl offense on one team. I don't think there's a team equipped to do that. And if you wanted to really get something out of that passing game, I would have said, heck yeah, go all in. Now, the financials become an issue because you weren't just trading for Julio Jones and his contract. You were trading for Julio Jones with the understanding that you're going to pay him more money, just like when they traded for DeAndre Hopkins. Now, there was the other thing. Getting Julio Jones for a second-round pick was never going to happen unless it was an AFC team. The Falcons were not intent on trading him anywhere in the NFC, and so if the Cardinals were serious, it wouldn't have taken more than a second. It would have cost them a first or a second and a player as opposed to a second and a swap of picks next year.
Well, and I just, again, it goes back to how much can you invest in one position? I'm a big Julio Jones fan, but again, I think it's something that would have had to have been done probably before they signed AJ Green. Definitely before they drafted Rondale Moore. I mean, at that point, if you trade, let's say you trade a two next year and a two and a three next year. We'll just throw out numbers for Julio. You've invested this offseason $6 million in a 32-year-old AJ Green. We'll just say a first-round pick in a 32-year-old Julio Jones, and you just drafted Rondale Moore in the second round. I mean, not just could you have a great offense? Yes, but you better for all of that, right?
Like, yeah, that's the thing, is that you better put up 35 points a game.
Yeah, and so I am of the opinion that any Julio game or any Julio addition, I truly believe would have had to have happened before free agency and the draft, so you knew how to go about building your team from there, because I just don't think you can invest any more in the position this year. Obviously, if Christian Kirk leaves and you move on from Andy Isabella next offseason, and then obviously AJ Green doesn't re-sign, okay, yeah, go ahead and trade for a Julio Jones or drafts, somebody. But it makes it tough to continue to invest in the position.
Coming up next on the Rise Up Sea Red Podcast, the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web, we will wrap it up and we will talk about, we'll go back to the Cardinals roster. They're in minicamp. We're going to talk about, who are the players that we would like to see make a leap this coming year? This topic will come back up again, but let's talk a little bit about now. That's coming up next on Rise Up Sea Red. We're back on the Rise Up Sea Red Podcast, the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web. Players that need to make a leap this year. This can be starters. This could be young players. Who are the players as we're looking at, I'm kind of thinking more of a mini cap mentality, And so for me, I'm thinking young players, and there's two players in particular who really need to show out, not only minicamp, but especially training camp. So their names are going to come up again. That would be their last two draft picks of last year, and Evan Weaver and Eno Benjamin. Evan Weaver didn't make the roster. Eno Benjamin didn't dress a single game. And they were hurt by a lack of preseason. They're going to get plenty of reps this year, plenty of snaps in the preseason. But I think even right now in minicamp, they've got to show something. Eno, I know, is going to have to be a core special teams player. And so he's got to make strides in his special teams drills. And then Evan Weaver has got to show something as well, because it's going to be interesting to see where they see him, because of the lack of experience they have behind in the lineup. It would be hard to keep him on the roster.
Yeah, and both those guys are going to be important. I think they really need to see something from Zach Allen this year. Health being part of it. But when you look at the defensive line, I mean, you could really say they need to see something from all of their draft picks the last 2 years, between Zach Allen, Leckie Fotu, and Rashard Lawrence. But Allen especially, you know, he was supposed to be kind of the guy on the defensive line. Right, like he was supposed to be the guy that came in.
Was a game wrecker.
The hustler, the hard worker that needed to learn the speed and the position a little bit in year one. Well, then he, you know, gets hurt, loses basically his entire rookie season because he got hurt. I think in the third game, it was either the second or third game, but you know, and was done. And then you get year two, where he just again struggles with injury. When he's out on the field, he hasn't been bad.
And there was even a game last year where he was fantastic.
But that's, I think, what you've been waiting and expecting from him, to kind of play at a consistent level, at that level consistently for a season, and to give the Cardinals something that they've, you know, needed alongside, you know, now the newly acquired J.J. Watt. And then I think the other guy for me, and he's not a young player pick, but I think they need George Phillips to step up. I think Phillips has to play up to his contract, because the one thing that we've talked about over the last couple of years with Steve Keim, and we just kind of opened the show with it, is veterans that have struggled to live up to their contracts when they've been paid. And that's when, you know, you look at Jordan Hicks and now Jordan Phillips. They need those guys to hit. Really importantly, because as we said, that we are expecting the offense to continue to grow and become, you know, a top 10 offense. The defense has to take that final step and become, you know, a defense that gives you a chance every game.
I'm also looking at some key starters, in fact, that they, Chase Edmonds, he needs to be better.
Yeah. That's going to be a massive one.
And
I would say also whoever, I mean, it's hard right now.
But Byron Murphy and Isaiah Simmons, I mean, those are guys that they're counting on. Those are the two young, well, We knew going to the offseason there were two young guys they were leaning on. They filled the team with a bunch of veterans with experience. And yet Byron Murphy and Isaiah Simmons were the guys they left. That's your spot. And so Murphy, and I, you know, he looks different this year. I think he's ready to take the next step. He's got to stay healthy. He's got to stay consistent. But he could become their number one corner. He's not going to be their follower receiver corner, but their top guy where he can play inside or outside and be their best player.
Yeah, and I think that's important caveat. They don't need him to be all-pro Patrick Peterson, but if he can be a Malcolm Butler type of corner, you know, they don't need him to be Stephon Gilmore. They don't need him to be, like you said, that guy that follows everywhere. But if he could be end of Seattle Richard Sherman type, or even San Francisco Richard Sherman type, I think you've got a really solid player there that becomes an important one. Another guy, or I guess guys, that you're looking at are going to be at that right guard spot, with the theory that you've got obviously an improving and very improved DJ Humphreys. You have the steady veteran Justin Pugh. You've got the massively upgraded center position with Rodney Hudson. And then again, a steady veteran in Kelvin Beachum, who they liked so much, they thought so much about, that they brought him back for a second go-round. That right guard, somebody has to step up and be the player there. We've talked about it with Justin Murray and Josh Jones. I'm not going to say it's a bad thing if Brian Winters wins that position, but I will say that two young guys that could have stepped up missed the opportunity to do so.
Right. Right. There's a lot of players that we want to see take a leap this year. You know, Kyler Murray himself could take another leap, but there, it's an interesting, but for me, like on the mini camp side of things, I was able to be there at practice on Tuesday. I'll be back on Thursday, just to kind of see. And that, now there's some things I can't report on because there's not much to see yet. One, I can't. And two, it's not like training camp, but there are some, for me, a couple of surprises as to how rotations are working right now and how they look so far, just the body language, their intensity. It's going to be interesting moving forward. But yeah, there's a number of players. I just hope, as we look at, like you talked about, the draft picks, we really want to see the Cardinals get production from their draft picks across the days. We know that Steve Keim has struggled to have draft picks stick, whether it's first round, whether it's later. It just hasn't happened. There's been some good ones, but most of them just don't stick, and even past year one. And so if you can get an Eno Benjamin to be a contributor on special teams, that's a win. If Evan Weaver can be a special team stud, that's a win, because that's how you fill the back of your roster, as opposed to having to replace them every single year. It's not what you want to see. And then Josh Jones, obviously, it would be ideal if he could win that right guard job. I know they're comfortable with Justin Murray, and I know they like Brian Winters, but it would be ideal if Josh Jones wins it, because then you're like, yeah, that's why we drafted him.
Well, and I think one of the big things that is kind of on the line this year, and that the Cardinals want to see in taking the next step, and you talked about Murray, obviously he's got to take that next step. If he's going to be a $45 million a year player. But when you look at the fact that between what we're seeing, the videos, the light reporting that you guys can do from out there, I think there's a different mentality with the introduction of J.J. Watt to the team and the roster on the expected work ethic while they're at these OTAs. And that's not to say guys haven't worked hard in the past, but when you go back in time and look through camps and you look through games and things of that nature, the two guys that the Cardinals have missed more than anybody on their roster were Tyrann Mathieu and Calais Campbell. And that's because those guys, they were your A1, you know, work ethic guys, but they were also your best players. And guys like Fitz and Patrick Peterson, they're fantastic Hall of Fame type players, but they never really commanded or asked for the greatness from the other guys. And there's nothing wrong with that, because you go there, guys lead in different ways, but it feels like with JJ Watt on the field that you're seeing kind of that intensity ramp up again, where guys don't want to be disappointing him for coming to Arizona and choosing the Cardinals over so many other options. And so I think for me, that says a lot, because you're already seeing him kind of morph into the leader of this team, and he knows he might only have 1 or 2 years left to kind of give himself a chance to win that ring.
And that's what you want. It's interesting because Patrick Peterson and Larry Fitzgerald were both leaders, but they were the low heat leader.
They're almost the lead by example type.
Yes.
Like they're not.
There wasn't
not
an intensity around them. Like JJ Watt walks by and they notice it. Like the intensity level goes up because of the type of person he is. It's the same type of thing. If he's kind of a defensive version of Tom Brady, the difference being a quarterback does much more to elevate people around them. But Watt has just there's something about him that just elevates the intensity of the people around him. And I think that's going to be good for this team. You see Buddha's intensity in how he plays, but Buddha doesn't right now he inspires people around him. But they don't they don't want to disappoint Buddha, as opposed like with Watt, you're like, oh, I want to be like that. And they don't want to let him down.
And that's the thing is you had those guys in Carson Palmer and Tyrann Mathieu and Calais Campbell when they were here. And now I feel like that's kind of been one of the missing things in the Kingsbury era, is that they need, and you know, that's really never been Fitz. I mean, we've talked about it before. He's not the guy that takes the young guys under his wing and pushes them to be better. He's the guy that he expects you to work as hard as him based on what he's doing. And let's just be honest, there's not a lot of guys that are willing to put that effort in. and so, you know, maybe that was silly by him to expect others to do that, but that's just how he was as a person. And I think, quite frankly, Kyler Murray is kind of the same way. Kyler is one of the hardest working guys I've ever covered in terms of his off-season work ethic and preparation and how he, you know, gets himself ready. And his way of including others is doing the, you know, things where he invites them to, to Dallas and pays for all of them to stay there and work out with him. But he's not the guy, he's not J.J. Watt who's going to yell at guys or
he might be this man. Year. He might be this
right.
year.
And
because he and a lot it, of as a rookie he was, couldn't do it. He didn't feel he could right. do it as a rookie. You started to see it last year and but more you kind of saw annoyance when things didn't go right. I think this year is going to be different. I think he's found a comfort level where I think he might be that alpha as a quarterback that the Cardinals have lacked for a little bit.
So we'll see. I think having JJ around is going to the two guys is going to help the most in terms of how to lead are going to be Budda Baker and Kyler Murray. They're just going to see what it's like because here's the thing, like it's really hard and you kind of brought it up with Tom Brady. It's really hard to be Tom Brady unless you have the cachet of Tom Brady, right? Like unless you can hold up a fistful of rings. And so Budda with his, you know, another all pro bid and the respect he's garnering from the rest of the NFL, he's getting to that JJ Watt. I don't want to say level, like obviously he's not a four-time defensive player of the year, but like he's getting to that level where he can expect and demand greatness from his teammates. And then Kyler Murray is going to, you know, like I said, be similar to that. And he needs to be similar in the way that he learns how to do that with his teammates from JJ. And I think that's going to be a big thing for them in the future. Because remember, like those are your core pieces. Those are your pillars. Once JJ Watt's gone, if Larry Fitzgerald's truly done, like those are the guys that are your franchise right now for the next, you know, we'll say 10 or 10's a lot, let's say 5 years at least.
And with that, that will wrap up this edition of the Rise of C-Red podcast, episode 308. We will be back next week, ideally to talk about any takeaways that we've had from things that have come out of OTAs. And that will probably give us, we'll have to start looking ahead to our divisional rankings. And then I will be preparing, as we get closer to camp, the team previews like I did a year ago. Those preview interviews with about the other teams and their offseason. So we are reaching that point where there isn't going to be a lot of Cardinals news. But with that, that's Seth Cox. I'm Jess Root. Thanks for listening and always, and we will be back again next week. Thanks for listening to the latest edition of the Rise Up C-Red podcast. Listen to previous episodes and subscribe to the show on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher Radio, Audioboom, or many other podcast platforms so shows are delivered directly to your mobile device. Please give the show a 5-star rating and always support the sponsors who support the show. We'll be back soon for the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web. Rise up, Red Sea, be Red Sea Red, and of course, Rise Up, Sea Red.